Bang boom, we rolling. Peace world and all of our upgraders. I'm Cameron Ra. I'm the son of the sun. I'm the one. I'm here with CJ the finish him. Day Slayer.
Yo.
We're out here in Cranes Roost, Orlando, Florida.
Altamont
Springs. Lovely days. Yeah, if we're gonna be technical.
Yeah.
But we out here Florida life by the lake, living it up, about to give you this broadcast. But bro, what we talking about today, man?
Alright. We're going to talk about Trump and the age of authenticity. We're going to talk about the Baltimore mayor and DEI. We're going to talk about Robert F. Williams and black gun ownership. The moral scale of a villain, psychoanalyzing the Dark Knight's Joker. Florida Supreme Court weed and abortion amendments. I think that's what it is. You vote for that. Wage hike for gig economy and... New York, and we're going to talk about how and when vets have a midlife crisis. So that's our rundown today.
It's our midlife crisis midweek episode. You know how we do. But yeah, we're going into it. So Trump was, you know, he's running for president again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hustling Bibles, he's selling sneakers, and he's, you know, he's firing off the hip saying what's on his mind. And while I'm not endorsing Trump, I will publicly share my admiration with him, as I believe he was one of the first politicians to usher in what we are coining as the age of authenticity. And when he came out and called Rosie O'Donnell, and no disrespect to her, but when he called her a fat, disgusting pig, and he's like still running for president, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a new era, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, people are going to say what they want. And I want to say that gave him a tremendous edge over your traditional cardboard cutout, smiling politicians who are kissing babies, shaking hands, and all that. Like, Trump was raw, and that's what I admire about him. And I think he inspired me. I'll give him that much. He inspired another age of politicians to be more authentic.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, man?
Absolutely. And then we'll talk about the Baltimore mayor, as you also are seeing. I've seen a couple of his, I guess, press conferences, and he's being authentic. Like, you could tell, like, that's him. You could see how he's dressing. You could see what he's saying. And we'll dive into that a little bit. But I agree with Cam, and we were covering this from the beginning, Upgrade America, and we're tooting our own horn because this is season 5.
Guess so.
And so we always wonder why politicians don't say it how it is.
Well, I think they were playing off the data, right? But the way they're getting data was kind of old. But if you're getting data real time, big data,
Fed talk,
and like, you know, we gonna roll that out. But like, if you're getting big data real time, meaning like thousands, if not millions of people, you understand, like, they want a certain thing, whether it's policy or an agenda. It is advantageous as a lawmaker to not necessarily pander to it, but to reflect, just share those values, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going on right now with social media, is in real time, you can get data and feedback. And if it seems like people like what you're saying, they can rally around you. And I recall you mentioned... what is the mayor's name from Baltimore?
I think it's Brandon Scott.
Yeah,
he's pretty much our age, so we'll go ahead and segue into this topic. And we were trying to do a little bit of a dive to see...
surface level.
Yeah, like how he got into politics. And it was a very progressive trajectory, also timing. So I guess somebody had stepped down or whatever, and he slid right into their spot at the right time. But I guess apparently he did pretty good work in his political career early. And I think he was the youngest mayor. I think he was 36 when he was elected.
Interesting.
Or something like that.
That kind of goes with our message of promoting young blood into politics. And you don't have to wait till you're 60 or 70 years old to get in the game. Like, do what you got to do. But by all means, it would behoove you to make some connections and to get some political experience.
Absolutely. So he does have a degree in political science. So I will put that out there. Looking in his background a little bit, he is from Baltimore, Maryland. So that's good that you got a native that understands the people, understands the environment, because outsiders, it's a little bit different, obviously.
Those pesky carpetbaggers.
But I will say one thing about the DEI part, and that's part of this conversation as well. I love how he called that shit out. Mm. Political dog whistles for all you white supremacists or all you followers of white supremacists' mentality and practices. Mm. That age is over with letting that bullshit slide. We calling that shit out. So you're going to have to keep reinventing terms and shit, because we already caught on to that shit.
You're going to have a whole lexicon of encrypted dog whistles.
Yeah, like, it's at this point. I love how he called it out. He hit it from every angle, so there's nothing left to say. Hey,
hey
puppy.
Handsome dog. But I agree as far as, like, and we called it out. Like, that.
I give you credit. You're a little bit ahead. You're ahead of me on that. Cause I was like, DEI, like, I know they mad about it, but then you took it further. It's like, nah, it's more to that. And then boom, that bridge joint happened, that incident happened, and you see the floodgates open with that shit.
Yeah, man, it's like anytime there's some sort of mechanical failure or something, they blame it on DEI. And it was even went so far as to associate the term with the N-word.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of agree, like you said, with the dog whistle. And it was like, I noticed it first with Boeing. Boeing was having these mechanical failures.
Mm-hmm.
And every, you know, you scroll through the feed, and it was an exercise for me. I literally said, how many comments do I need to scroll through until I see a DEI reference? Mm-hmm. And I would say it was like 7.
Yeah.
And then you see something else, and it's the same thing. So I don't know if these are real people.
Or bots, yeah.
Or bots trying to push that agenda. However, this is something that that I have noticed, and it's being disassociated as a not quite a racial slur, but there's a degree of racism in the term.
Absolutely. And those who practice the religion of white supremacy, because pretty much at this point it is a religion, it's a way of life, it's a culture, there's, I guess, principles or whatever you got to follow, like... That shit's over, man. Like, it still exists, but decoding and people being resistant to it, being aware, being educated and empowered, yeah, that's happening.
And it's funny. It's really laughable, because it's like, while you're exerting all this power over, you know, the black community and other communities as well, you're being usurped and controlled by some folks we can't talk about that are bombing the shit out of Palestine.
Like,
we not bothering you. We're not no threat to you. But, you know, y'all still want to try and kneel on our necks and, you know, things of that nature. But I agree. The thing is, y'all want to fight it. You don't want to give us reparations. You don't want to give us anything.
Yeah.
But, and then it's like when you do, when there is some sort of program, you guys hated affirmative action. You know, fought that tooth and nail.
Yeah.
And it's like any type of support for a black community, then you want to turn it around and say it's because of this DEI that planes are failing, that boats are running into, boats coming from other countries. Nations.
Yeah.
are a result of how you say, black people on the job and incompetency. But last I checked, there's still quite a few white males above these black people. So, like, are you not following up? Are you not checking the work? Or, like, what's going on? I could see if it was an entirely black-run organization, but it's not. Yeah. There are checks and balances. Yeah. So you cannot blame every mechanical failure on African-American. That's just... Is it bot-like behavior? Do real people think like this? I don't know.
Yeah, and then I think the other acronym for the term DEI is did not earn it.
Hmm.
Or some shit like
Interesting.
That.
Interesting.
Didn't earn it, yeah. So I'm like, but I mean, we know in our culture growing up, and I know at least in my household, you always had to work twice as hard for everything.
Absolutely.
You had to be excellent, had to have perfect manners, like all this stuff, because of the stigmas, stereotypes, and tropes that have been ingrained in the culture that we've grown up in America.
And I recall my mother saying that, like, yo, you gotta be 110 10%. And I'm like, mathematically, that doesn't compute. But, like, I get what she was saying. Like, yo, you got to be the best of the best. You got to study harder. You got to present yourself in another way. Because I'm those folks who control Hollywood and the music industry, they pick the worst of the worst to represent the black community.
Yeah,
facts. And it's like, this media thing, while it's like, yeah, we know that it's fiction, we know that it's entertaining, but on a subconscious level, the symbols, the symbolic black man is supposed to be something to be feared. He's a criminal and he's angry and everything else among those lines. And that's how people perceive us. So it's like, as CJ was mentioning, you gotta put in extra effort to undo that that facade.
And one example, and the same thing with women. They have them loose, no morals. Mm. You know, Jezebels, all this kind of stuff, like whores, all this stuff, man. And like, that's not the women that I tend to run into. You know, that's not women I grew up with. Now, have I seen those type of women? Yeah, sure. Every community has a different class of people ranging the spectrum.
Facts.
So, like, you can go to different other countries, they got prostitution. It's legal there. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know,
every country has their element of organized crime.
And, yeah.
And unorganized crime.
Yeah.
So it's like, even, you know, in Russia, they got the Russian mob and things of that nature. So it's like, no one culture is like, oh, evangelic and perfect.
Yeah.
It's, there's tons of pieces of shit. We all need to work on ourselves and upgrade America.
Cool. Man, what else we got? What are we talking, diving into next?
So, well, let me see what else we got on this rundown.
Also, Brandon Scott, the mayor of Baltimore, I think he ran for governor. So, I see governor in his future, maybe senator, maybe a run at the presidency at some point.
How he manages this incident is definitely going to make or break his career.
Absolutely, I agree.
I see a lot of, there's going to be a lot of haters that are trying to, everyone's trying to point responsibilities and blame and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I think where he's going to, it's going to hurt him when the state, if not the nation, feels the impact on the supply chain. Because I imagine that's a very popular route. That's,
yeah.
It's over a mile or bridge. There's going to be some, how you say, discomfort while things adjust.
Yeah.
And people are going to hate because of that. But at the same time,
I think as long as he shows the urgency, as long as he's coming up with the solutions, as long as he's educating the public about what's going on,
yeah,
timeline, like project management, keep the milestones going, stuff like that, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be able to weather it. They're saying, I think, that the insurance company of the ship has to pay a part of the damages or whatever. So I'd be curious to see if that actually happens, and then the Fed's supposed to chip in.
I thought
well.
You're talking about. So this is another. Let's throw some conspiracy salt on there. You mentioned the insurance policy.
Yeah.
And I thought you were talking about what this information I just received. The gentleman who owned the World Trade Center, or who took out the insurance policy on the World Trade Center, I believe he got like $5 billion. If it wasn't $500. Maybe $500 billion or something. So a ridiculous number is what he got for the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
That same individual took out an insurance policy on the bridge. I don't know how.
Oh, wow.
And he got a trillion.
Wow.
He got a trillion with a T.
Yeah.
But, yeah, connect the dots with that. Let me see if I can, because I believe I bookmarked
that. Yeah, I'd be
very
curious.
And then we can, I can give you the guy's name, and so our upgraders can do their own due diligence. Because we are not the news. We are just
we're observers of society.
Facts. We're giving it to you in an entertaining manner.
Absolutely. So definitely do your research. Scholarly resources.
But while I am scrolling through my ex bookmarks, let me share this quote by Carl Jung. Life really does begin at 40. Up until then, you're just doing research.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, let me scroll through this to see if I can get that information on as far as with that insurance policy. But I brought that up to say that, yeah, people, okay, here it is. So no, there, I guess the, how do you say, X is saying the Francis Scott Key Bridge was not owned by Silverstein. It was owned or operated by the MTA, Maryland Transport, Taxation Authority. Talk of insurance losers refer to the ship damages as well as the economic damages for business. So I guess they're saying Larry Silverstein cashes in on $1 trillion insurance policy on the Baltimore Bridge. Y'all gonna have to do your own due diligence on that. Twitter is, formerly Twitter, aka X, is pushing back saying that's not true, but who could say
it? But it is true for the World Trade Center.
Yeah, yeah, facts. Okay. He did get some bread for that. Right. So, we want to talk about, me and CJ were talking about, you know, one of the first, armed protests with open carry was done in California by the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
And then this led to a discussion about, you know, further on black gun ownership, but it led to a discussion on an individual. He wrote the book, was it Negroes with Guns?
Yeah, Negroes with Guns by Robert F. Williams.
Yeah, yeah. So we want to touch a little bit about this and then also talk a little bit more about black gun ownership and, you know, share his story. But please, CJ.
So I'm going to read a quick excerpt from his book, The Editor's Note.
Okay.
It is 8 years since the Supreme Court Justice's historic decision on school segregation lifted the heart of the Negro people, giving strength to the struggle for voting rights and for integration of public facilities. The tenacious resistance of Southern racists, including the use of violence condoned when not abetted by local authorities, has given rise to bitter frustration and anger, bringing to the fore the issue of armed self-defense. In Monroe, North Carolina, under the leadership of Marine veteran, shout out to the Marines.
Hoorah.
Hoorah. Robert F. Williams, the Negro community, took up guns for protection. Monroe, North Carolina, has become a test case of unqualified right of Negroes to arm self-defense when law and order breaks down.
So what CJ was describing was, like, my understanding is, you know, he's a former Marine, but the town was kind of getting attacked and harassed by the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, yeah.
And they took up guns and they handled their business.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, when black people take up guns, there's already this stigma that black men have guns, black men bad, and that a court is going to not look at the outcome favorably. In this particular circumstance, they shot it out with the Klan, and I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
They shot it out with the Klan. You know, came out victorious, and then the courts also ruled in their favor.
So, the thing me and Cam were talking about, we were talking about historical figures. So, I had a Malcolm X shirt on yesterday.
Guess so. That was a really
And he was like,
shirt.
I want to know more, like, more of a deep dive on who that is. And then it spurred another conversation about when we hear the narrative of, say, Black History Month for civil rights. You never hear the resistance part. You never hear the fighters. You always hear the nonviolent shit. Well, we know that's not totally true.
And we know it's not effective.
Exactly. And that's, like, you got the Deacons of Defense, which is an armed group that was basically like the Secret Service for
Martin Luther King.
Essentially, I think that kind of the concept.
And he was packing too.
Exactly. You know? So they never talk about that part. And that's the liberal part of racism. You know.
What we learned from them is it's not just good enough to pack. Yeah, body armor too.
Yeah.
But, like, the notion of gun ownership, and I think it has been muddled by, I hate to always point my fingers at how you say the CIA psyop of gangster rap. But, like, the criminality associated with black gun ownership has put a negative stigma on it. And it's no fact. Demographically, a lot of black people are in the inner cities. New York City, in particular, has very strict gun laws. Like, I don't think you can own any type of handgun. If
you
not
can,
even
you just
got
to jump through a lot of hoops. You can, though.
I imagine.
But I think you can't be in Manhattan, I think. I think you can be on the outer boroughs.
Because I sought to get, you know, firearms and when I was in Brooklyn. And
yeah.
I don't even think they have, like, stores that are selling guns.
Yeah.
They're not as liberally as in Pennsylvania, Texas, you know, shout out to the Gunshine State, to Florida.
Yeah.
But it is, what's the best way to say? You have the fundamental right to say whatever the fuck you want, to believe whatever you want, to pray to whoever you want. And then subsequent to that is you have the fundamental right to carry a firearm and to be for self-defense. And all these little, how do you say, local jurisdictions and everything, they have no right to shit on the Second Amendment. And I don't know. I want to push for...
Nationwide concealed.
Not necessarily. I would push for, what are they calling it?
Constitutional carry.
Constitutional carry, by all means. And
it's starting to pass. They just passed it in South Carolina. I think this week or last week.
But at the same time, if you're really going to reflect upon this, the nation, the state of our nation, the vulnerability of the southern border, I mentioned the sleeper cells, I mentioned the Venezuelan gangs, and everyone else and their mother just coming in here with bad intentions. Like, the citizens need to be have easier access to guns. Because,
the average cop response, and it depends on your neighborhood, obviously, zip codes matter, is probably, what, 10 to 15 minutes at the most? By the time somebody attacks you or something, that's going to be within 30 seconds.
And it puts it into perspective, because it's like, when I was guarding nukes, and this is showing my age, but back in the day, doing nuclear security, our response time for an external SART, and that's meaning it's an external security response team, it was like 6 minutes. To get to a nuclear weapon, so it's like for a person, you can see it being a bit longer, particularly if there's more people to respond to. So where I'm going with this is that you gotta be able to hold shit down until law enforcement arrives. And I don't know if any of our upgraders have ever stepped in a ring, you know, and boxed professionally or. How you say amateur-wise, but 3 minutes in a boxing ring is a mighty long time.
Absolutely.
Let alone waiting 10 minutes with some armed psychopath who's strung up on meth or some other hard drug. So, yeah, we need to change that stigmatism, even from a homeland defense perspective. Ukraine had to scramble to arm their citizens, defend off Russia. But if our citizens are already armed, not only do you set a precedent, like, yo, you can't just fuck with anybody because everyone has guns and they'll smoke you. But at the same time, it sets a precedent for, you know, I don't throw out any nations like China or Russia, but, like, don't come up in here because we'll smoke your paratroopers.
And for cultural reference, you got Red Dawn. There's two versions, the 80s version and, like, the 2013 version. So as far as outsiders, what it would look like is a thought exercise. And then if you want to look at internal threats, you can look at Olympus Has Fallen, the trilogy of that. And I think it was the sequel. Matter of fact, the second one and the third one. Either way, one was inside. Both of them are insider threats. So also talk about that internally, domestic, foreign or domestic. That's a part of our oath when we sign up.
To
so
defend
you gotta
against
be aware.
Threats, both foreign and domestic. Hell yeah.
And then a nation that does arm everybody, for example, is Switzerland. Everybody has a gun.
Same with North Korea.
Population. So
they got an AK-47 for every man, woman, and child of age.
I mean, we got more guns than people here, so that shouldn't be a problem to arm everybody. I think all Americans definitely should be armed, for sure.
And I think it was like, I wasn't there, but I could only imagine in like the days of knights and swords and everything. Like the average person, and swords were expensive, but if you could afford one, you would have one. You would have a sword or some sort of a weapon. And yeah, I guess it was a bit more medieval. They had bandits. And whatnot, but like, if everyone had a gun, the world would be a better place.
And self-defense, of course, hand-to-hand combat. Everybody should know something.
Yeah.
So just throw that out. Dirty tactics and organized tactics, I guess you can say.
See the Chinese, right? They got this game. It's pretty cool. You hook your phone up to this little rifle, and it becomes like a laser gun. They're playing laser tag with their these. But at the same time, essentially, they're learning tactics. They're learning to use cover and concealment. They're learning to use squad movement and suppressive fire, things of that nature. But I'm not saying our kids should be conscripted into military school, but definitely firearm safety and usage should be incorporated into the curriculum. Hand-to-hand combat should be incorporated into the curriculum. And I just have this sense that equalization, meaning like, hey, we all know kung fu now. Do we really want to fight? We all know hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
Like, you have that equalization. I don't know.
It keeps everybody accountable. It just goes back to the discussion we've had every season is why every sovereign nation should have nuclear weapons. It keeps everybody accountable.
I agree. And we were just discussing that, how Iran is currently under attack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, would they, Israel, whoever, would they be attacking Iran if they had nukes? And I dare say no, because I think what keeps us from bombing the hell out of North Korea is that they have nukes. They have a nuclear ordinance. So I concur that every sovereign nation should have nukes. However, you need a two-person minimum concept. No madman or woman should be able to rage nuclear war because they're having a bad day.
Absolutely, because it's a heavy responsibility. It's the responsibility of humanity.
Facts.
Essentially.
It essentially could end the world, you know? Yeah. So it's like you need some accountability, checks and balances.
So what else we got on the rundown?
Let's take a look at that. We went from black gun ownership to everybody should have nukes. So we want to dig into the moral scale of a villain, right? CJ and I were talking about, you know, just how laws are changing and you could just be minding your own business. Now you're doing something illegal just because the laws are changing. And it was almost like, do you become a villain as you age? Is it something, is this as times change? I don't know. And we kind of, somehow it got to us, we want to psychoanalyze the Dark Knight. The Joker from The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
So let's give it a stab, man.
So I think we both watched this video on YouTube where somebody's breaking. Was it a psychologist or somebody breaking down?
He was a psychologist and he was psychoanalyzing the Joker. He alluded that he may have been a military combat veteran. And as such, we want to give our own insight.
Yeah. So some of his concepts made sense, like his tactics. Like I was really thinking about it. I was like, okay. But then when you hear him talk on why he does stuff, I think that's when it kind of clicked in my head, like, you know what? And now that we're at the age of 40, I would say the Joker makes more sense compared to when we were younger.
I can see that too.
And you get to the stage, and this is what me and Cam had this conversation yesterday, of what's the morality? What's the scale now between laws changing so rapidly and you getting older based on your environment and survival? Like, what are you, like, is everybody meant to be a villain or are you going to have the sheep or what?
Everyone has their own story. And from the perspective of the story, you're either the protagonist or the antagonist. If you really want to be objective, George Washington was a terrorist. They had a sitting government, and they did guerrilla operations and terrorist acts, destruction of government and private property with the Boston Tea Party and among other things. There were some psyops involved as well, where they triggered the the British fire into the crowd. Yeah. So it was.
They were
essentially terrorists. Yeah. However, his story, we view him as a hero. You know, he owned slaves and took their teeth.
Yeah.
But like, we view him as a hero. So it's a matter of perspective. I know you're a Star Trek guy, but I love Star Wars. But I'm gonna shout out. I think it was Emperor Palpatine. He said, there is no good or bad. And I think Yoda said this too. He said, thinking makes it so. It's a matter of perspective. So whereas the Joker, I don't think he said, I'm a villain, I'm a bad guy, I'm just gonna... No. He had his logic, his way of thinking. And what I deduced is like, he was a Marine. Mm-hmm. He just has that hoorah, that jarhead personality to him. That dark, real dark humor that they tend to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like he was a Marine that seen too much, mm-hmm. and he wanted to shock or buck the system.
Yeah.
And that's what I gather from the Joker. But what about you?
Well, in another sense, it's relatable for us because when you come out of that environment, it's a shock to your system. When you come into the civilian world.
And it's moving so slow.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is tied to that as well, if you want to add in different environmental factors, because your environment does shape you. So you're in a structured, disciplined, life or death, pretty much, environment, you know, ultra-hyper authority. You deal with that all the time. So essentially, you're oppressed in the middle, especially Marines, from your leadership.
What the civilians don't fail to realize is, like, the military is a dictatorship.
Absolutely.
And I'm talking about if you have command. For instance, I was a staff sergeant, so at one point in time, I had, like, 10 people under my command. And it wasn't a democracy. It wasn't, well, we all feel like, nah, motherfuckers, y'all gonna do this shit, and you're gonna do it now. It is a dictatorship. There is no room for negotiation. Nope. There is no room for compromise. It is, I am giving you a lawful order.
Mm-hmm.
I fell underneath that regime for 8 years, and yeah, man, you mm-hmm. feel that.
Yeah.
So I could imagine a guy who did life, everything, and then the Marines...
Hard body.
They are in the shit with the shit, meaning they're in some of the most dangerous places with the worst fucking equipment.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure if the Joker, you know, his character might have seen a lot and mm-hmm. that reflected to his behavior coming out.
Mm-hmm. But I just love how he questioned Batman, right? Mm. Well, what makes you better than me? You got money, but you still out here doing fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Essentially, right?
He's a vigilante justice.
Yeah.
It's not lawful. And they did kind of add that element that while Commissioner Gordon was cool with Batman,
mm-hmm.
other cops tried to pursue Batman because he's essentially breaking the law.
And you see the power of money in politics. You see how everything affects that. And Joker's like, well, what about the average person?
Hmm.
He kind of is a reminder of the average person, right? That's fed up, that's oppressed by all this bullshit.
And I think that's a great analogy in there, too. And it's like, you mentioned some of the military tactics he used to shock and awe. He obviously used psychological warfare,
mm-hmm.
hand-to-hand combat, additional to, you know, small weapons, and small arms and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you alluded to you felt he may have been intel. Why do you think that?
He just always seemed to have that step ahead. And, I mean, this might be a military stereotype, but Marines not really seen as smart, per se. They just take orders.
I see that as... You don't have to score so much on the ASVAB to get in.
Yeah.
But we love
you guys, Marines.
Oh.
You know, we got jokes between us. So, you know, we cheer for us and all that. But
that's one thing that the one Air Force security forces were known for, one, for not necessarily violating orders, but sometimes deviating from our area of responsibilities.
Yeah.
But in doing so, several airmen have stopped. You know, major incidences to security. So, but I want to further elaborate is that with our training, they kind of conditioned us all to be leaders. So,
mm-hmm.
like, hey, if one person goes down, you can step up and fill that role.
Yeah.
I cannot say so much for the Army or for the Marines.
Yeah.
For the Navy SEALs,
yeah.
those guys, they pride themselves on that as well,
mm-hmm.
in addition to their specialty knowledge. Like, they can go in there and kill everyone, and then, how do you say, they know how to dearm a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
So it's very high skills, but I could see Joker being maybe Marine Recon?
Yeah, maybe. I was thinking he... If he was something, definitely some kind of special spec ops.
That's what I was thinking too.
I don't think he's just a regular infantry.
Grunt.
Yeah.
And that's why I said I think he's seen too much. He got a glimpse of the bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
in addition to being in those hostile territories, which led to some very severe post-traumatic stress.
Absolutely.
To the point where it's like he had to destroy his identity.
Mm-hmm.
That ego, his original ego, to be and crafted the Joker.
Yeah, that's wild.
And
to think about
they
that.
Said like the same Batman has PTSD too. And mm-hmm. there's the video I was watching, he was saying like he couldn't like. Both the characters, they couldn't deal with their own realities, so they had to create something else and become that to manage their trauma.
Okay. Damn. That's real shit. So they're one and the same, two sides of the same coin, essentially.
And that's I think they were trying to communicate that through the film as well, which I thought was done very well.
Yeah, now as we're sitting there thinking about it, like it hits all areas of society as well, like as we're talking about it. So I think it's just funny how you see stuff different when you're older.
I totally agree on that. It's like, it's not so cut and dry. Like, this is the bad guy, this is the good guy. It's like, as we mentioned, Batman is out there, he messing up too.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Joker had his rationale and his motives. And it wasn't so shallow as money because he burnt the pile of
money. Yeah, I know, right?
So it wasn't as so shallow. It was a lot deeper than that. But it's... While, how you say, Joaquin Phoenix, variation of Joker was different. And to some extent, it was pretty cool when, you know, all the mayhem at the end. But I don't think it was crafted to the point of the Dark Knight's Joker. I would like to see that character again, particularly, I look at
that new Joker as like everyday Joker. And I look at it before, I think it was a prequel, so I think it's before he became Outlaw Joker, if I'm correct, right?
It's like definitely like a prequel.
Yeah.
But it's almost, how I've heard it being said is like, I don't want to say spinoff, and I want to say almost like an alternate reality Joker. Because me personally, I think it would be very hard for the character Joaquin Phoenix played almost seemed to be mentally handicapped, like a little slow. But the Joker from Dark Knight we were talking about seemed to be very brilliant, very strategic.
Oh, absolutely.
And I find it to be a near impossible gap for the character Joaquin Phoenix played to evolve into the Dark Knight.
But I will say with that Joker, the new Joker highlighted was how far you are on the scale of morality based on your circumstances and based on your environment. And I think that was the biggest message I got from the movie. It was like, yo, a couple of bad things in your life turn this sugar to shit real quick.
And he didn't seem like, I agree, he didn't seem like a bad guy when, you know, when they're building up his character. He seemed he loved his mom. He seemed to be cool with the folks at work. They picked on him, but he took it with stride. One until he snapped, and, you know, shit got a little different. But I guess that goes to say that could be anybody.
Yeah.
That could be anybody goes through a similar situation, and you have you could be broken mentally.
Yeah.
But, again, I still view that one as that even in 10 years, that character would not become the Dark Knight Joker.
You're
not
going to
get all the weapons training and all the insight and the strategy.
Yeah,
not going to... I can see him just be madder and kooky. Maybe he gets a little power. He's organized, got some goons and shit, but not like... Not to Dark Knight scale.
So what else is on the rundown, sir?
Check this out. So we hit Dark Knight. So you mentioned that... waving at the baby.
She mean mugging, or he.
So it's like you sent a link about the Florida Supreme Court, and I guess they're going to be voting on weed and abortion.
This November for the election for Florida, there is an amendment to legalize, I think, recreational marijuana and something about abortion. I think they're going to tweak some things with the law. So, That's what we got to vote on.
That's interesting because it's like, I guess one of the biggest threats to red states, and we all know Florida is rather purple, but is weed and also abortion.
Yeah.
I say these things because these are two of the biggest, how you say, platforms that liberals, left, Democrats, what have you, mm-hmm. that they run and fight for.
Mm-hmm.
And so it almost seems like if you legalize weed and abortions, mm-hmm. you're going to have a lot of liberal folks moving mm-hmm. to Florida, and they could possibly turn it blue, if not bluer. And I think that's why Texas is, they're not budging with their weed policies or abortion. What do you think?
And the other thing is they're starting to ban porn in states, right?
Interesting.
So I think Louisiana, was it Texas? I think Louisiana and Texas are banning U-Porn. Not U-Porn, Pornhub.
Interesting.
Where you got to put an ID. I think Virginia already did it. You got to do an ID. You got to take that call?
Or
you
nah.
put a, yeah, I sent one to voicemail too. So you're seeing, and I was like, well, we've written a bill for prostitution. Why not go ahead and legalize it? If you're going to take away something that is a release for people.
But things, I just find it hard to believe that they don't want to allow pictures in movies.
Yeah.
But they're going to allow flesh and blood contact for commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, I feel it is these hard conservative values that are going to, they're standing in the way of getting a lot of money. And it's like, instead of doing this, we just got to find crooked ways to tax people and get money. But
yeah, I don't know. And it's very oppressive and suppressive for human nature. I mean, if you're being honest.
It is rather suppressive. It's like,
We naturally want to feel love, sex, connection. That's a natural thing. That's not a non-natural thing.
It is.
So how are you going to legislate that?
It's,
you know,
natural. Above all, is what private citizens, private adults
yeah.
are doing. And it's like there is supposed to be a distinct separation between church and state.
Mm, absolutely.
Your conservative values should not be influencing the daily life of the average private citizen.
Absolutely.
If you don't want to see titties on billboards, I agree with that, because it's in public. And they don't do that. They do it in Germany.
Yeah.
Good on them. But like,
Deutschland.
I get that it's in public. But in private, yo, you laissez-faire. Keep your hands off.
Yeah. I predict that most people will vote in favor of the marijuana in Florida, because it's been on the ballot and it's mm-hmm. been knocked down a couple of times. It did go through for medical.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this one is
recreational.
I think. I can't remember exactly.
That's just going to be crazy.
I think. I'm
all for
sure.
it. I'm all definitely all for it, particularly for combat veterans.
Mm.
In my past, I no longer smoke weed, but in my past, I smoked weed, and it was very helpful for my PTSD.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to do it full recreational for, you know, for the civilian populace, by all means, do a test trial on the military veterans
mm-hmm.
and let's see how we can get this money and upgrade America.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that conservatives, or I guess red, don't like to spend money. That's a conservative value. Well, why not raise money so you don't have to spend as much money, or get money from the feds, you know, in these red states? They don't want money from the feds. Well, make your state self-sufficient.
Facts.
Like, it's common sense. You should be manufacturing everything in your state. You should have all this shit legalized. You should be self-contained. States' rights, right?
Right.
So stand on that shit. Like, make it easier to do that. Everybody should be employed. Everybody should have upward mobility, or at least access to it. Social services should be available for people.
Let me interject.
Go ahead.
Social services should absolutely be available. If you're going to make homelessness illegal,
yeah,
you had better well have some social services in place beyond jail.
Yeah,
you know, to deal with homelessness. It's not like, oh yeah, well, we'll just lock him up. Then he's no longer homeless. He's getting very hot cots. No, like, there's a better way. There's most absolutely a better way. I would vote for the
mm-hmm.
for the bill on weed. I want to look more into what the abortion
yeah, I do too.
Law is saying. In the past, yeah, I got graves of you know
yeah.
of abortion. So at one point in my life, I was for it.
Mm-hmm.
And from I'll just leave it at that. And I understand that people get into those situations before they're ready to have kids. So it sucks. It is, how do you say, it's sanctioned murder.
Yeah.
It is what it is, but it's, you got to draw some sort of line with it. So, it's an uncomfortable discussion that needs
absolutely
to be had.
It's a hot button issue. We know that. But there is common sense where everybody could be happy with it for the most part. I think you can satisfy most parties if you do the right legislation. If you're mindful about it, obviously you want women included in that discussion as well because it's their bodies.
And that's why I don't feel I have, in this particular moment, I don't think I have the authority or the expertise to speak on that. But I do believe in a woman's right to choose. It's just hearing those horror stories in California about post-born abortions, meaning the baby is born and they're still going to kill it. Like, that is, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But we can, you know, talk on that in our time. Perhaps we have another female on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can dive into that. What on earth is that?
Apple Maps.
I see.
Oh, interesting. How you get that gig? So she's mapping this.
Cool.
Yeah, interesting. Things you see at the park.
Yeah. A young lady just walked by with a backpack with all of this, how you say, Ghostbuster type of equipment on
which
there.
Which I can't wait for that new one to come out.
It's coming to drop. I'm waiting for that Civil War, though,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that drops
that
next week, I think.
12 to 12?
12, yeah.
Yeah, man.
What else we got? Yeah. Wage hike for gig. And what was it, Uber Eats?
Uber Eats in New York.
Wild.
It's going to like $20. It's going to $20 an hour, more or less. But it's like, you already overpay for DoorDash. You get five guys on DoorDash, be prepared to pay like $50.
Yeah.
And it's like, now you want to do the wage increase. I'm curious how that's going to impact the price of goods.
Yeah.
And the service.
We've been kicking this around. We know between autonomous robots and AI, a lot of jobs and careers are going to get displaced. We know this. So I'm very curious how this plays out because COVID boomed delivery services. It boomed it. You know what I'm saying? So if we're being honest, Rona, the blip, it boomed delivery services to where mom and pops even had to start doing delivery services to stay afloat.
Real talk.
To stay in business. So now that we're posting, now that that's the standard, when you come to Target, drive up and they put your stuff in the car or you get it delivered to your home now, especially for parents, I think that's a great, I would say parents and maybe single people, those delivery services, if you can afford them, that's a really good option, especially single women. I'm not trying to be sexist, but to avoid certain situations, shopping, like parking garages and all that, have that stuff delivered to your home. It adds a little layer of safety, I would say.
And there's a cost for, you know, for benefits.
Yeah.
I think it's good for the drivers, you know what I mean? My concern is just that domino effect. It's like, now you have, I don't know, let's call them an x-ray technician or something like that, who's making similar wages, but dealing with more stress. It's like, what's to stop them that, I don't want to call it brain drain, but like, people will be like, yo, why am I putting up with all this and I can just drive around and make the same amount of money?
Well, I mean, at the same time, because you've neglected wages, you haven't passed a nationwide living wage with cost of living. And now when everybody raising the rates, they're complaining this and that cost, but you've been putting this off since our lifetime. Essentially for 30, 40 years, wages haven't increased.
Yeah, I know.
Yet CEOs' wages have increased exponentially.
And rent has increased exponentially.
And food has increased. And other services have increased. Even going to a regular like Chipotle, you're going to pay like $15, $20.
Yeah.
But you can go to Chili's or Applebee's and get a meal for that.
Hmm.
Like a whole sit-down meal. Like, come on. Like, make that make sense. So.
It's very strange in that area of industry right now. And it's like,
go ahead.
You mentioned a nationwide wage, living wage. And it's like, I'm curious how that would work with, how you say, with, with New York City. And then places like Cali where everything is expensive.
I mean,
like,
their wages are already higher than I would say the average, I don't know, American city or town.
But would they not get an increase?
They would get an increase, yeah. Like nationwide, so federally, it should be a living wage federally and a cost of living, just like our senators, presidents, all these motherfuckers get that shit. Military members, government employees. Why is that not the standard?
We're gonna have to sit down with the macroeconomic folks.
Yeah, because if you do that, you no longer have $7.25 or whatever the fuck it is. It'll be living wage based on where you're at. And we also said subsidize small business, give them tax incentives and stuff like that so they can compete with major corporations and incentivize major corporations to come back domestically, have more of their operations domestically. This is what we've been talking about, Upgrade America, for fucking five seasons. And I don't get what is dragging the feet of that because of greed and profits instead of taking care of our homeland.
And that's why I said you should be reallocating prison labor, volunteer, because we're not with any form of slavery, but you should reallocate prison labor rather than pay the Chinaman, $4 a day to make iPhones. Bring that back to America. You're saving on logistics. Mm-hmm. You're saving on, the labor, because I'm sure you could get the labor cheaper, through that system. Above all, you can stamp that motherfucker with American made.
Not only that, you can incorporate universal basic assets, right, that we've talked about, in lieu of pay, right, to incentivize loyalty. And it's also passed private state pensions for private citizens as well. Make that nationwide. We've been talking about that. So, I wrote a bill for that for Florida.
While I'm totally against freaking CBDCs and those shit coins, you kind of raised something, an interesting concept. Like, so if you made like a prison coin or some shit, a type of cryptocurrency that'll be used for these universal basic assets. So rather than paying the individuals in cash, you pay them in a cryptocurrency that they can buy and manage their universal basic assets on the inside. So when that's you think about idea. It, prison is like is an anti-society. You're not in society, so you might as well have your own money in there that prisoners can work for and buy. Hey, you can buy better living quarters. You can buy better, you can buy better food. The luxuries of the outside on the inside, but paid through cryptocurrency earned by manufacturing and things of that nature. And, of course, this cryptocurrency could be redeemable for cash on the outside.
And on top of that, we would definitely... I got to write a bill for this. I didn't even think about it. But a restorative justice bill for expungement of records if you're nonviolent, nothing extreme, you're not a habitual criminal.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to pay $10,000 to do that.
Not only that, for juveniles, especially heavy on the restorative justice and intervention, to try to steer them, because when you're juvenile, you could still be steered.
Yeah.
When you get to grown men, it's a little different. It's very extreme. So we want to figure out modern-day solutions for these problems because we are misusing the prison system, and these people are still humans at the end of the day.
Really?
And we need to have some humanity when dealing with this stuff.
And again, the intent is to rehabilitate.
Absolutely.
Not to condition and make and animalize.
Yeah.
So it's definitely need to apply some Upgrade America concepts there. And we got a last
What's the last
subject
topic
on here? Is like we wanted to talk briefly about how and when vets have midlife crisis. Crises, rather.
Yeah, so I had one at 30, and I remember that year so much shit happened that year. I graduated from college. I was engaged. I lost my hair. So I had to go bald. So that was a whole new lifestyle. It was real big because my hair was a part of my identity. You know, I had wavy, curly hair, whatever. I was engaged. I broke off the engagement that year. I just did things out of my normal character. So I did see a psychologist, and she mentioned that vets tend to have their midlife crises more intensely and earlier because of the responsibility of when you go in the military. Essentially, it's life or death as soon as you join.
Facts.
Everything is critical, right? So she was saying you're sped up as a youth, as an adult. You're basically getting given adult responsibilities at 18 years old, considering I went in at 18. So it's not uncommon for us to have a midlife crisis at 30 or younger.
That's wild. I never really considered that. And then the notion that military service shortens your life expectancy a little bit too.
Especially enlisted with the amount of stress.
Yeah.
The most stressful occupation was being enlisted. That's not even getting down to the career field of specialty.
Facts. But it's like, it makes sense that vets would have experience that, you know, a little earlier.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned, you described it to me like it was a sense of, how do you say, not caring or
yeah,
doing
it was
what
like
you
a,
want?
It was like an elation of euphoria and ecstasy every day. Like, I felt this every day for, like, a time period. I can't remember the time period. It's like a blur.
Why is it defined as a crisis?
I don't know. Maybe because you can do some irrational things. Like criminality or something like that. Maybe something deviant or something. Which I didn't really dabble in. I was still conscious enough to know, like, I don't really want to do that. But, you know, my behavior did definitely change for sure.
Interesting.
And it was out of the norm. It just was. So,
I'm trying to, because I feel like I had a midlife crisis my whole life. But it's like, I guess it's maybe as I age through that stage, or maybe, God bless Azzy Baby, like, I'm having more rational, more logical, more, making more stable decision. Well, I just had a recent fuck up, but I mean, moving forward, you know, making more logical the decisions.
What was that saying? Fuck up to move up.
Yeah.
I used to see that in corporate and in the military. So,
but it happens. But you know, I guess the biggest thing for our upgraders is to maybe be aware if you're of it. Talk to someone.
Yeah, you know, professionally, I think,
sure. Yeah, because you talk to the wrong friend, they'll give you some bad advice.
Oh, hell yeah, no. Yeah, do it. Live your life.
Like. You're like, what? Clean out your 401k and buy a Lambo?
Yeah,
man.
So, definitely. I had really nobody to really talk to at that time because I didn't know what it was, really. I didn't know really what to do with it. So, yeah, it was an experience. But yeah, any closing thoughts since we're coming to the end?
Closing thoughts, as far as patience is a virtue.
I'll
say that, man. And it's like,
absolutely.
Great things come to those who wait. And I got 3 minutes. I'll break it down. So just imagine if you could get anything that you wanted instantaneously. And it sounds like, oh, yeah, I can manifest ice cream and blah, blah, blah. No. People tend to think more about bad things than good things. And if you could manifest anything instantaneously, you would probably manifest World War III. But there is good that there is a degree of time. Because it makes sure that we manifest purposefully for things that are in our best interest. But waiting is the hard part. You will get everything you want.
I think that's it, upgraders. Shout out to Washington, Virginia, one of the highest listened regions that listens to the podcast. So shout out to you guys.
Facts. FBI, appreciate CIA, NSA, guys, we love you. For real, keep doing your good work. I appreciate your service. I don't know what's y'all heard what's happening on the 8th. It's going to be that eclipse.
Yeah.
Stay vigilant. And, you know, it's a lovely day. Get some sun. And spend it with the people you love.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Upgrade America and upgrade where your homeland is. For
facts,
all you international
facts.
Upgraders. All love. We are all one human community. We got to make this shit work.
peace to everybody out in Taiwan. I hope y'all safe.
Absolutely. Shout out to Phoebe and her family. And happy birthday to Chantel, one of my oldest friends from the Air Force, CE Troop.
Air Power.
Space Power.
AF.
Peace out.
Peace.